So, yes, thank you for tuning in to Family Case Files. I am your host, V. And this episode, I have my co-host, Jamie Johnson. And we're going to be talking about a little bit of probate court with my legal advisor, Joanne Dennison. And she has brought a guest along who is someone... case that we're going to be looking into. We have Linda Scully with us. Hey guys, how y'all doing?
Hi, how you doing?
Hi.
Okay. So this is probate court, and I know I'm making some people mad with this episode because they want it to be all about the children, but the name of the show is Family Case Files, and the government doesn't care how they're going to take your resources, your family away. They don't care the age, as long as it's someone who is lacking in rights. You know, children and the elderly are looked at as the same, and you know, it's a resource for money and a way to split families. So this is definitely a subject that's going to be covered on the show, especially having my legal advisor, Joanne Vinson, specialist in probate court. So this is why we have Linda on the show. So I guess we should dive right into this and I should ask Linda, what did you go through?
Okay, it's really quite a long story. I'll try to. It was back in 2013. They pretty much kidnapped my mother. She had gone out of the house and had gotten, you know, just like, she was elderly, but she didn't have dementia or anything. She just got a little turned around, I guess. And they captured her off the street. We went to the hospital, make a long story short. They kidnapped her. They took her to the hospital. When I arrived at the hospital, my mother was strapped to a bed, her arms, legs, already drugged. That I could tell they drugged her because she was slurring. She couldn't talk. She was begging me to get her out of her restraints. I notified the personnel to take my mother off those restraints. Why do you have her tied to a bed? Why does she have a diaper on? My mother kept saying, I need to go to the bathroom, Linda, to help me. And I immediately started to try to remove the restraints, but the way they're tied up, I couldn't get them off. The nurses had to come. I told them I was going to go back home, get my power of attorney. I called my brother and other family members and get my mother out of the hospital immediately there. I said, why is she being held? There's nothing wrong with her. So make a long story short, went back to my power of attorney, brought my documents, came back to the hospital, and we were greeted by the Evanston Police Force Hospital police force, and they would not let us remove my mom. So from that nightmare on, they got a doctor that her doctor, ironically, that was from the hospital that we were at, which was St. Francis Hospital. The doc, her main doctor, primary doctor, was out of St. Francis Hospital. But when the guardian, they notified the guardian office, I guess, and they got another doctor from way somewhere else that now I found out that they use him quite frequently, that decided that she had dementia or she didn't know what she was doing, which was farthest from the truth. So they wouldn't let us take my mother home because they alleged that abuse charges. What abuse? There was nothing wrong with my mother. She had no bruises on her. She was just an elderly woman that got a little tired because she had been out and a little turned around for a minute. And there she was captured and kidnapped by a hospital staff. And then the guardian, they must notify the guardian office of City of Chicago. They immediately got involved, I guess. And within 5 hours, they already got into my mother's building, which is in a land trust, which has been an invested trust for over 50 years, and they already were leaning it. So, and captured my mother, hid her in St. Francis for 5 months under a different name, Mary Brown, hid her from all her family, her children who loved her, I lived with my disabled brother. My mother did it in a different apartment, and they proceeded in this nightmare. They ended up coming in trying to throw us out of the building. They threw us out within 6 hours. We had to leave the building. And my disabled brother and everything, they broke pipes in the house to try to damage this apartment building that had different apartments in it. It was just a nightmare. And at that time, I was so blown away. I thought I couldn't imagine what was happening to me. It was just, how could people come into someone's house? It was like Gestapo. They were breaking in when we were not there. They were changing locks on us. It was, everything was done without due process. It was a total nightmare. And the worst thing is they were drugging my mother. They stole my precious mother from all of us without any reason. Fake claims that she had cocaine in her system. I went and got the medical reports when they entered her into the hospital. Her drug, panel, they ran everything. My mother had absolutely nothing in her system. The allegations were false. I printed those all out. I got them from the hospital. So they came up with these wild accusations, and none of them were true, and nobody would listen. It was terrible. Nobody would look at the documentation. They proceeded to go throw us out of the building. My brother and I were beneficiaries. My brother was disabled. They seized accounts that I was on with my mother. They seized all our belongings in the apartment building, everything, paintings off the wall to rugs on the floor, and china, and everything we owned. It was just they took my mother. So that's pretty much in a nutshell. Proceeded to sell the building for next to nothing. They said it was a $220,000 cash sale. This is all done without due process. Nobody was served. No proof of these allegations. It was like it was a nightmare that people can get away with this. The probate officials can come into a house, take people out of their house, kidnap them, steal all their possessions, sell their property, invade land trusts that are protected by your rights and civil rights, your law, and break them without due process, no hearing, no court, just suspend power of attorneys, revoke power of attorneys without due process of law. Everything was in writing. We had power of attorneys for years, over 15 years plus. And everything was stipulated from my parents' directives, and all of that was thrown out the window. All the civil rights were violated, my mother's and ours. It's terrible, and it happens quite frequently to so many probate victims or disabled victims that can include children or people under the age, right, Joanne? Doesn't it include Joanne?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Does it include, also would include in the probate division, they could become a guardian to someone who's disabled, even though they're not a mother or father. They could be a brother or sister or, a niece and nephew, and they treat them and take everything away from them if they're provided for in an estate. Most important thing, they took the life of my mother. That's why
this is really just evil. This is corrupt. Most of my questions were going to come from things such as, how do they determine, abuse and how do they just throw a person on drugs? But you're saying there's no due process here at all. This is like a kick door, a smash and grab, pretty much.
In the system, we have the documents. There was no drugs. It was all a lie. We have the hospital documents when she was admitted, and they took drug tests after that. There was absolutely no drugs in my mother's system. That was ridiculous.
And it's very likely that a woman your mother's age could just be a total cokehead, right?
It's just what they did to do that to a person with, and that they get away with it. I mean, this is United States of America. No due process. They steal and kidnap people, drug them, kill them, and steal their estates.
And you don't think that it can happen to you. And you just said you were so, just blown away that everything happened like it did. It's you don't even know what to do at that point. Am I correct? Like, you were just dumbfounded.
I was, absolutely. My mother and I were very close. My whole family is. We're all very close family. And I was just devastated. I was beyond, I didn't even know how to breathe. I mean, because it's a nightmare. You know, you think the law is going to work for you and all this is happening and nobody's listening to you. And it just snowballs until they get complete control. My mother passed away. They drugged her and she didn't even get to see her family. They hid her from everybody, her friends, under different names, different hospitals, which they created Medicare fraud. They changed bank accounts on my mail, on my disabled brother without due process, took mail to be delivered to them. I could go on and on. It's just a nightmare. How does this happen?
And it's unfortunately, as a civil rights activist, it happens everywhere. And people do not realize that. And as being mentioned, it is children and the elderly and the disabled. All of them, absolutely.
That is correct. We get it from both ends. I just wanted to mention one more thing, and that is that Linda, they also, what happened was one of the social workers from the hospital, St. Francis, went in and guardianized her. That's a really important part of the case. The other thing, so the hospitals are doing it. They're in on it. And she was the one who got the security guards to come down to the family and said, if you don't leave immediately, we're going to have you arrested for criminal trespass. So they had to leave. Once they left, they secreted mom away. She went after the hospital, a nursing home. And then when they got their money that sold that property, she went into hospices where they killed her off. But she was drugged all the time. She could barely move. Sometimes she could barely open her eyes. And this is what they do with the elderly. The other person that conspired to do this was the Office of Public Guardian for Cook County. They're very evil. The name of the attorney was Nate Goldenson, and he was in on it. He's still in on it as we continue to fight this. So her mother now has a decedent's estate open, and in the decedent's estate, what they're doing is they're trying to cover it all up. The file in the guardianship was closed, but we caught them giving portions of the file to the attorney and decedent's estate and other individuals who could cover up this string of crimes. Linda also filed a federal district court lawsuit, and the judge, Caracas, K-O-R-C-A-S, pretended he didn't understand the lawsuit and he didn't see anything wrong and he dismissed it. So we're now, the next step is appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't know what our chances are. But Linda has one of the most horrendous cases. We can also get into the 8 times that they arrested her, too.
Yeah, I was arrested 8 times out of my own building.
Wow.
For no reason. I mean, and then this Nate Goldenson let squatters come into the building to damage it. And I was in the process because I was, that was my mother's building. I was going to court to remove these people who had gotten residency in there since all this was going on. And Nate Goldenson stopped it in court, saying that they were the guardian, they were the lawyers for it, and they weren't going to kick them out, which they let. And then they proceeded to break pipes in the building to make sure that it iced over. That was on the guardian office. We called the fire department. We called the police to let them know. And we moved all my dogs out of the yard, my rescue dogs. That's how bad these people are. Just unbelievable.
Well, let me ask Jamie really quickly. You being a former police dispatcher, and did you notice, or in hindsight, do you think that you would have been able to notice any police calls that would have looked like this sort of activity, these people doing whatever the hell they want to do?
You know, back then, unfortunately, I did not. Not only was I a dispatcher, but I was on my way and taking the test to be an officer until I unfortunately got wrapped up in my own corrupt police officer case where they came and seized my child. So not my mom, but my child. And no, I would have, you know, I'm sitting in a dispatch center. You know, I'm thinking I'm doing nothing but good and sending people out to homes where children are getting removed. You know, no, we don't see that. I was dumb to the situation and dumb even 20 years later. We don't realize even people in those fields, not all of them, the court staff, you know, not all of them, but the police, big people know, you know, the top dogs know what's going on. I'll tell you that right now. They definitely do. They feel that, I think officers feel that they have to follow the other, and I deal with CPS, DCS and all that, but you said it was the Office of
the Public Guardian in Chicago, Illinois Daily Center.
They're like the DCFS for old people.
Yes, that is exactly what I hear. I hear exactly the same thing, is that this mirrors what happens to our children.
Yes.
And the disabled. It's just a different department of the government. And it's because, again, they're getting funding. They're making money every way they can. You also mentioned about the hospitals. That, too, is being done with our children. Child abuse specialist. social workers who removed my child from the hospital. These hospitals, the schools, the hospitals, and the police departments, they are definitely involved with that. Are the dispatchers and the clerks and all that? No. But are the police officers, do they understand what your rights are? Absolutely.
Right. And it's all without due process. I mean, that's what our country, it's, they don't follow the law. They just do what they want to do. Everybody. It's amazing. It's just, I can't believe it's happening. We've notified the FBI. We've sent our paperwork off to them, not only my case, other cases of other people who live similar, just the same way. If you look at a lot of these probate cases, it's all pretty much the same. They suspend power of attorneys. You can't suspend a power of attorney or revoke it without due process of law. They just throw them out the window. Like, it doesn't exist.
They take children from their natural born parents without due process, without a paperwork, and without a warrant. And they do that to our parents and disabled as well.
Terrible.
Did she receive the paperwork and it just went somewhere else? Or was this a situation of secret court dates that she couldn't get to?
It's a secret court. As soon as they did all of this, they realized it was corrupt and they sealed the case right away. Later, when Linda realized that sealing the case was wrong, she had to go into court 3, 4, 5 times to get the case unsealed. And to this day, you can go and look up that case. You will not find any documents on it, despite you complaining numerous times. The official court order is it was unsealed once in September 2017, and then it was unsealed again in July 2018. How does that happen? And yet, if you go to the 12th floor of the probate department of the Daily Center, you cannot see any of the case. If you ask for the file, nobody can still find the file. That's how corrupt it is. And no, Linda had been involved in the case. She filed a cross petition for guardianship of her mother. She should have received a copy of every single document, and they never sent her a single thing. It's a secret court running under secret rules. And the whole thing is a string of cash for the people involved. The OPG, why is the OPG, a state agency, getting $250 an hour? What's their money string there? Well, we pretty much figured that out. They are taking bribes. And it shows on their property records, which I think you and I have talked about before, how to take a bribe. You know, judges and attorneys, they learn real quick how to take a bribe through property records. The other thing that they get is they pass off business to various attorneys. The attorney for their whoever else is in there, they get money out of the estate. And then, of course, they pass off the property to their friends, and they want to sell it for a very, very low price. So you notice that Linda talked about they brought in squatters to damage the building, drug dealers. They were actually drug dealers. And then what they did is they brought in a heating company, you know, a heating company to cut the heating pipes so there would be no heat, and then the pipes would freeze and it would completely ruin the building. So a $2 million six-flat apartment building in Chicago near the lake was sold for $200,000 cash under the table. And of course, the appraisal comes in very low too, because they've ruined the building. But everything that happened to that building was something the OPG Office of Public Guardian or their cronies did to the building. There was nothing wrong with that building before that. And that's how they make the money. Because right. Now that building's going to be fixed up a little bit, sold to some other guy for, say, $1 million, and then he's going to fix it up a little bit more, and then he's going to sell it for $2 million. And that's a whole other cash flow. And we had one of my clients actually talked to the realtor that was involved. Right. She asked about this particular building, and the realtor, Shyla Small, who refuses to answer a subpoena, by the way, just laughed.
Well, the public at the Guardian office protected her, and he's trying to represent the real estate agent on his
own.
He's a corporate lawyer. He tried to block it with no appearance on the case, and he was allowed to do it.
Yeah, that was that Judge Malone that did that? I think it was Judge Malone.
Yeah, Judge Malone was a judge on the case at that time. They passed the buck so many times in that probate court. We had Judge Riley, Judge Malone. Yeah, and Judge McCurry. Judge McCurry allowed Nate Goldenson and all these people to just stand borders. I don't know how she wasn't aware that any of this was happening. I don't know if it's because she worked with them or how she could allow this. Plus, they don't have court reporters in these courtrooms. They seize disabled people and elderly people and don't require, they don't, by the judges and the lawyers decided that they don't need court reporters. So they
Wait a minute. In guardianship court, there is court reporters. You haven't been able to get the transcripts yet. In fact, I just had a case where they marked the Pauper's petition. Transcripts were free. Oh, my God. You would not believe the brouhaha created. The judge, they actually called the judge, and the judge had a fit, called the client. This is Ida. Called the client into the courtroom and told her to leave. I published it on my blog, too. And you can get the tape, and it's been on Facebook. They told the client to leave. She is never getting free transcripts. And it was an ex-party conversation between the court reporter's office and the judge. Blocking the transcripts, which I reported to the FBI.
We hire our own court reporters because most of the judges don't have court reporters.
No, that's only in decedents, Linda. She's a little bit off there. They always have court reporters in guardianship. We have not been able to get the transcripts. They don't have it in their decedent's mother, so we've had to hire court reporters for that.
Yeah,
and I've been trying to get free court reporters there, too, but I haven't been successful for indigent people. Linda is on Social Security. She can't afford any of this stuff. She lives in senior housing. Her brothers are disabled. They're also indigent. And when you get the petitions marked free transcripts and free files, they just have a fit and they blow up. Even though the court system should provide that for people, right? I'm sure you've seen that, Jamie.
Absolutely, and this happens all the time. They don't give you records. I have case after case after case. Again, with my foundation, we help cases for removal of children and family courts all the time. And I do not know how, in fact, every one of them almost, is missing files. They can't get them. I've called the courts trying to get transcripts myself. You know, how do we get these? Oh, well, there's no way you can get these. They took the grandfather off the case, so now he's not a party to the case. Now he can't get the transcripts from the case he was in. We find that a lot. And I wanted to say, I noticed this when you guys were talking. If you guys look at this, do you see this interlinking of all of these departments? You know, you're like, well, this person and this person and this person, they are contracted. Why would they go against the people that are paying them? That you guys have
One of the things Linda didn't mention is the fact that they had Burroughs Moving Company contracted to the OPG, and they would stop over the building regularly and steal whatever they could find. They had Haviland Limoges China, they listed on the inventory as cheap China, which we all know is some of the most expensive China in the world, right? The roses pattern probably worth $5,000 each set of China. They said that they had a cheap roses silver plate, and that pattern is only in sterling. So that means that somebody probably, and all the property is missing. It's not like somebody sold this and added it to the inventory, to the estate. They didn't. It's just all missing. And Mr. V here has all the court records. So you can look at the court records. You will see all of this. I got the record on appeal, and I got the Seventh Circuit brief and a petition for rehearing. All denied, all stupid decisions. But those records are up there, so you can't say that anything we're saying tonight is not the truth. It is a God's honest truth, and that those documents are up there, and I sent Mr. V the link. They're also on my blog, so you can take a look at all of her court documents. This is all absolutely true. And the federal court judge turned his back to Linda's story. It's heartbreaking for her. It's horrible.
Well, I got to ask, since these secret proceedings and this corrupt process, this doesn't actually have to take very long. How long from point A to point B where you are right now, how long does this take?
They took my mother on July 13th, 2013. They guardianized her and was in her estate. Well, first they did temporary guardianship from St. Francis and drew out the power of attorneys, contacted Nate. They were already in the estate like 3 days later, putting a lien on an invested trust, land trust, putting a lien on it, and hiding my mother in and out of the hospital under Mary Brown, which I found her. This took like a couple months. Then they put her in a nursing home called the Carlton, where they lock her in that nobody can, all the people in there are locked in, that they have a buzzer door, and that's pretty much where all they put all the probate victims, and then pass them off from hospice centers to hospice centers, don't let anybody come. It happened within a couple, I mean, I'd say, what was it, Joanne? How many?
Well, let me answer that question. It depends upon the case and how much you have to drain out of the estate. Because all of the attorneys need to make at least $200,000 or $300,000 a year off of the estate if you have a large estate. But Linda's basically, it was an emergency temporary guardianship, and then they sealed the case, and that just only took a few days to kidnap mom, hide her to a string of hospitals and nursing homes, and they had to sell the building right to a friend. They had to ruin the building, sell it to a friend, so that took about a year, and then they killed her off. So they have this all planned.
Well, my brother and I, who's disabled, my brother's in senior housing. I'm on a disability medical, but I don't have housing. I haven't been blessed with that yet, but my brothers are, and he's disabled in a wheelchair. I mean, he's in a wheelchair, sometimes braces. They broke into his apartment, changed locks in the entire building, and gave me 4.5 hours to remove my brother and myself.
They stole his medical equipment too, didn't they?
Yeah, all his equipment, everything we own. They broke in when we weren't there, broke into all the apartments and took paintings, stuff, went through every drawer, everywhere. He had burrows waiting out in front. And then they left the keys at the police station for us to pick up. We came home, we couldn't get into our apartments. This is when we were gone.
So what I hear here, Linda, is just like what's normal. These, you know, this court system is not only they secluded your family member, and that's a huge thing that they do in all of these court systems. They take all the family away from the children. They don't, you know, take them to the family members. And the same thing with you. It sounds like. But what I notice is they pushed you mentally, emotionally, financially.
Yes.
You were secluded from your family. That is so common in what these hospitals and these courts do. And it's, I'm sure, Joanne, you probably see this in all the cases you deal with.
Oh, well, that's what I fight every single day. Now, with Ida, I was lucky. We got the trust agreement, but we have to go back and vacate the order for eviction. They would have thrown her out in the street. She only gets $700 a month from Social Security. Her husband's disabled. We're trying to get him on VA disability. He's so shocked from whatever tour duty he was in. He won't even leave the house. He's got such severe PTSD. So what I basically try to do with these victims is we help them. Like Ida, get her to a VA disability, encourage her, get the social worker out, get him signed up, make sure she has all the food stamp relief. This is the first thing we do with victims. We'll fight it in the court, get together the documentation, and make sure the family has some kind of subsistence. They'll throw it, the court will throw you out in the street and literally let you starve to death and be homeless. That's how cruel they are. They don't care if they issue an order to get out, to disabled brother, disabled sister, a 99-year-old grandpa that has no money, they don't care about, they don't care. So most of my victims, when I get them, they're very shell-shocked. They can barely, Linda will tell you, she is great tonight. She just rattled off that case. She knows her rights. So when I first met her, which was back in 2016, she was a mess. She was a complete mess. And it's just this process of, I'm sure you see it, Jamie, leading the victims through it, telling them their rights, telling them to file motions. Yes, you can get the transcripts. FOIA the police reports. Keep on complaining. Get it to the FBI, the state's attorneys. Do not stop. Keep on going. Because otherwise, Linda was arrested 8 times. Guess how many times she went into court and they immediately dropped the charges? 8 times. Because they know it's fake. It was all fake.
I've been arrested myself for standing up for cases, too. And it happened. It happened. And not only that, but I myself was arrested. And then the charges pushed up.
Wow. Yeah, they disappear. They fall off the docket. They disappear.
Mine aren't up in charges, even. They'll punish you if you fight back, I think. And that's the big problem is we have people
Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break here, really quickly.
All right, great.
We'll come right back.
Hello there. This is Lyra Jubb, and I would like to introduce you to two organizations I was instrumental in creating while enduring the harrowing experience of losing my children to the terroristic and broken system commonly known as CPS in the family court process. After losing my parental rights, I began seeking any assistance possible. The problem was that for as many people who have been going through a similar crisis as myself, there was no clear understanding of how to proceed after parents entered into the family court system. There were advocates willing to help, but different advocates had different information due to the confusion of the family court process. Their efforts were largely unfruitful as a result of this confusion, and many advocates were becoming overloaded with the barrage of parents in crisis. Over the past 3 years, I have been working with others to develop these two organizations and the websites to assist in dealing with this systematic failure. The Coalition for the Protection of Children and Families was founded in March of 2016. Our vision was to help families remain whole and to support families that have been separated work towards reunification. To find and combine groups and advocates who share this vision and want to help. We are here to assist in a wide range of family and community support programs. Our mission is to find and offer support, counseling, and advocacy for parents involved with family court, DCFS, CPS, related child custody matters, or any family-related matters. We aim to bring clarity, knowledge, understanding, education, and application to the people. We want to be providing the cutting-edge standards and abilities. We have advocates available to assist in pro se representation and provide on-call assistance on our sites and in the social network. We also lobby for laws to protect family values and reunification of families. We meet with federal, state, and local government officials and lobby for equal treatment of parents in the eyes of the law. We are dedicated to supporting parents and families with education, counseling, and nonviolent solution-based advocacy. The Coalition for the Protection of Children and Families is a faith-based nonprofit, and we do accept donations, and we have lots of outreach programs that we are pursuing at this time. If you would like to get involved, please visit our site at www.coalition4protection.com and sign up with our parent advocate registration form.
Okay, yes, we are back from commercial break. And we're serious about the funding here. I don't need the money. My media doesn't need the money. We are self-sufficient and so forth. I do this out of pocket. I'm that much of an activist. But please, Joanne Dimmison is a hell of an activist, too. She sacrificed so much. That's so much that has changed her life. Support her blog. Definitely donate to her PayPal, her GoFundMe, etc. Not just putting a commercial in the show, just putting it in there. Okay. So we're going to roll back in here. And during the break, we had such a great discussion. And Jamie, I want you to roll out that question for all of us to hear.
Okay, well, I was talking to Joanne and Linda in regards to what I experienced with being an activist advocate and owning a family rights foundation is I tend to use the example of skills where, you know, the family, the person, the mother or the father that I have is on one side, where then you have all the states and all the DCS and all that, which would be Linda's other courts, the probate and the other divisions. But I asked Joanne if she found often that there's no assistance, no advocacy. So I wondered if Linda, besides Joanne, had anybody else on her side. Like, that's, I think, again, not only seclusion from the family, but seclusion from any kind of help. I know they're not going to look at the documents, but if they don't have an advocate, like for me, I can go into them in the meetings and say, look, I'm a foundation founder. I'm nationally recognized. This is going on. But when the parent is there, or the daughter, they don't have anybody eyeballs. There's no accountability. So they tend to just make sure, even me, they will not let me stay in those meetings because I give her power. And I know Joanne has, but was there any other part of that, you know, that was on her side of the scale?
I don't know anybody else is doing the kind of work that I'm doing. So
did she have any other support, though, from, like, other areas? And I know maybe you're specialized, but any other? Like, I deal with domestic violence in a child case, so I would have a domestic violence advocate or a substance abuse advocate. And, again, she's dealing with the same things. Her mother was accused of drugs. Where was, you know, was there any other advocates coming in and helping Joanne?
Well, what happened is I had to learn how to defend myself in court, and I defend myself. I went through lawyer after lawyer who would quit and say that it was so corrupt there was nothing they could do or they weren't strong enough. So I had to educate myself through reading and through finding people in libraries and that kind of thing who helped me, you know, which I can't mention, you know, but in general law libraries. But you know what I mean? It's just... there is nothing. It's like I have to do it myself right now, and I would love to make us get stronger. Hopefully all of us can get together. And
well, that's why I started what I did, and I know Joanne does what she does for a passion, and that's again why I started Family Rights Protection Foundation, because there isn't. And like when I started, I thought it was going to be just the one court, but it ended up domestic violence, you know, advocacy and substance abuse advocacy. I also, you talked about the drug test, Joanna. In DCS, in our family courts, we have a very corrupt drug testing system. So I heard that you said that it was net positive for cocaine.
Joanne's actually been on the show several times, and the one thing that is always brought up is the falsified drug testing.
It's true.
This is the number one tool in their arsenal is the falsification of drug testing.
They never show proof of it. All they do is say it. I went and got the proof. I have everything from the hospitals, and nobody recognizes it. They listen to these lies. Show me the paper. Show me the proof. Show me where these abuse are. They never show anything. They just continue to stamp their court records and continue their destruction.
Well, Linda's case is a little bit different, and it's because right away I had her get all the court records, or the hospital records. And, you know, at the hospital tests, I haven't noticed that they lie. It's when you go out to these independent drug testing facilities, and that's when DCFS, you know, puts a strong arm on them, you know, to lie about the test. That's our biggest problem. I haven't heard that the hospitals lie about drug tests. And also, and I'm sure, Jamie, you've told people this, if you have to take a drug test, make sure that you go to the nearest hospital emergency room or recognized drug testing facilities such as LabCorp and get a urine and a blood test. The blood test is for the actual drugs themselves, not metabolites, because you know that certain types of foods that you ingest, they'll be the same as those metabolites. So make sure if you're going to a drug testing facility, you also go to the hospital or the ER and get a real drug test, or a doctor with a lab that's on, I know many doctors don't have the labs, or about $500,000 for blood and urine testing labs. There are some doctors that have it. Oncologists seem to have it a lot because they make a ton of money and they always have to test cancer patients. That's a good option for some people, but get an independent, reliable drug test as soon as you know you have to go for a drug test at their tight-end facility. That is a huge thing that I do tell people. But again, this case is different. But the hospital records will disappear if you don't get them right away.
And yeah, right away, thank God.
They disappear, they get altered. So the first thing you do is before you make a fuss in court, go really, really quietly and get those medical records from clinics, from the hospitals, from the doctors. Don't let them on that you're in litigation or no litigation. If you can't do it, get a family member to do it because they know that you're under the hot spot. But those medical records are crucial. And making sure that your drug tests come clean is also a crucial thing, too. Okay?
Now, let me also ask, I want to sort of piggyback Jamie's question here. As far as the advocacy is concerned, now, I didn't know there's such a thing as a legal clinic until I started having my censorship issues with my media. Now, I've had to get very legal here and pushing it all the way, but started off with a legal clinic. Now, where are these legal clinics? Is this just a university thing, or is this can this be found in county government institution? I mean, where can a person start?
Yeah, the federal government has so much money set aside for legal services for the poor. You get grants. I can't qualify for a grant because I'm not licensed, because of course the Illinois disciplinary board took away my law license for my blog. The blog is still there. They haven't made any difference in what I'm doing, except for now they really don't know what I'm doing, okay? But they do get grant money. You have to have a licensed attorney, and those are usually associated with the university. For some reason, grants, they seem to want to give it to a university. So you can't go to those legal clinics. I know in Illinois we also have Prairie State Legal Services you can go to. And you may find some local legal clinics. Now, the problem with the legal clinics, I'm sure Jamie will tell you this, they will not represent you in court.
I was about ready to say the same thing. Yes. I mean, honestly, yep, absolutely.
And they give you some kind of BS advice over the phone for like 15 minutes, and they move on to the next person, because the need for legal services for the poor and for middle class, lower middle class people is just so much in need. And the courts have gotten so corrupt. And unless we get more and more grants for these legal clinics and for people that are actually in the field doing this kind of work, we're not going to make a dent in corruption. Although I've seen a lot of things change since I put stuff on the blog about that probate court. They stopped just handing out orders for possession, which is what happened, an eviction order, right in the probate court, and that's what happened to Linda. I think they have also stopped suspending powers of attorney, although I did see one on Ida's case, and her case is from this year. And I'm going to put another reminder on the blog to judges. Don't do this. This is illegal, and it's corrupt, and we have to stop doing it. The other thing you can do is you can go to the roving room and put it on their roving room profile, okay? So now, Martindale Hubbell is a big directory of attorneys, and they rate attorneys. But they, unless you're a client, unless you paid an attorney, they're not going to do anything about it, all right? So the roving room, I think, is a big one. Do you know another one, Jamie?
We don't have, the only thing that we have here, in most of them, for the DCS and things, are, the court's appointed,
Oh, it's our cutie. Hi, cutie.
Yeah. Hi, this is every reason for, why I started what I started. If you'll excuse me for a moment, but give me 2 seconds here.
That's all right. I'll just
what we have is public defenders, and I'm going to tell you, I have such corruption in that I even have my CASA renting a building from the public defender.
Wow.
Not putting it under their name. They have it under his girlfriend's name and have it zoned wrong. But when I call the mayor, she says they couldn't possibly do something wrong. But he's the commissioner's attorney, And she told me I was emotional. I said, ma'am, I think you're emotional, because she made the comment that, well, I know them. They wouldn't be corrupt.
Yeah, right. We know where that's going.
Right. Excuse me for a moment. I apologize.
No, just take your time.
I got another. Well, you mentioned earlier the Supreme Court. Now, for something like this, is it really going to take amping it up that far? And is this corruption done? I mean, the Supreme Court can only see so many cases a year. So they're able to completely victimize a person to the point only the Supreme Court can fix the problem. I mean, there's so much that goes along with it. The paperwork's more expensive, right? There's the filing fees. No. There's this and that.
No. Well, you can get it for
me. Clarify some of those things for us, please.
Yeah, we could talk about the Supreme Court. First of all, the Supreme Court only takes cases generally where there's a discrepancy or conflict between the circuits. And we have 7 federal circuits. Illinois is in the 7th Circuit, which is where Linda's case is, and that will be up on my blog so people can take a look at it, as well as donation information. But I'm going to take, Linda's case needs to go up there because they murdered her mother, okay? Now, the Supreme Court takes about half of its cases from the same law firms in New York and D.C., okay? So expensive, fancy attorneys, they get their cases before the Supreme Court, but not the little guy, okay? But every year, they pull 1 or 2 pro se prisoner complaints, and they pull 1 or 2 pro se. Now, this is out of, 4,000 or 5,000 cases? They're going to pull 1 or 2 pro se individuals who have been egregiously harmed, all right? And that's besides their usual First Amendment, and they like to do abortion, right? And they like to do a few other types of cases. So I'm hoping that maybe Linda's case will get chosen, because she's pro se. They murdered her mother. It was obviously a tied-in corrupt system in Chicago, Illinois, of all places. The largest court system in the entire United States. And this is what the 18th floor probate court is doing. So that's how I'm going to push it before the Supreme Court. So all we can do is cross our fingers. I have never, ever seen this type of a case up at the U.S. Supreme Court, but I think it's important for this type of case to go there. The probate case where mother's estate, she's granny nap by hospital, the OPG gets involved, the house is sold for 10 cents on the dollar, and then she's murdered in the end. I think that would be a great case. I don't think there's one up at the Supreme Court. I've never seen one. So maybe there's some hope there, because I'm certainly going to put that in my opening paragraphs. So it's time for the U.S. Supreme Court to look at these probate cases, trace the corruption, and eliminate it, because we can't keep on treating our elderly this way. And, of course, there's parallels to Jamie. We can't keep on treating our children this way. This is ridiculous. It's corrupt. It's tied in. The drug testing facilities are BS. And they run you around like a hamster in a cage, even when they didn't get a warrant to take that child. Right, Jamie?
That is absolutely correct. I have them right now. I mean, they will use whatever way. They have actually used a text message to remove a child.
Yes.
Then they tell the father, you know, you have to keep the child. We got the DCS to release it. Then they filed in family court. Then they ended up, she actually kind of won. And then the attorney bullied him. That child's still gone. And there's no reason. It was before Thanksgiving. And I've been fighting that in Illinois, actually, myself. That's an Illinois case.
Well, good job. And the other way that's kind of tied
in, she empowered herself. And let me give her a little credit right here. Like Linda, and I apologize, but before I get off, she empowered herself, and she's filing those motions, and she's asking for that, but they still intimidated her. She has been through all that an attorney has been through in schooling, in education, and trial, you know, stuff. So here this woman is doing everything, and I'm so proud of her, but sometimes it's just still not enough. What do we do,
guys?
I really wish people were more like that and even more ferocious. I know every time people rear their ugly heads at me, I'm growling right back at them. So I wish people would get over the shock of things and the fear of the government.
Well, you know, part of the problem, when you're in probate, you worry every day if they're going to murder your mom or your dad, all right? And if you're in the children's court, juvenile justice or lack of justice court, mm-hmm. you're worried every day they're not going to ship your kid out of state, and they threaten you with that. So it's mm-hmm. one thing
they do.
Or they threaten to let, you know, I had one case mm-hmm. where they threatened if the son didn't do what the OPG wanted him to do, they were going to guardianize the mother, throw her in a nursing home, and then in hospice and kill her. I got one of those cases. And
this doesn't happen where they do die, they do. And I believe you in the 1,000%, being that I'm not even in the legal department like Joanne is, I see it. I see the death of children that were left that I myself have called the governor, the director of the state, saying these kids are at risk. They are in a really bad situation and nothing, you know. So, and they die. I literally had a case where I tried to help the parent, and within a month, those children, one of them was dead and one was almost beaten to death. And I still deal with that family. But again, it happens. I've seen a wife killed. I've seen, not only that, do they do it themselves by the medication and drugging. And you know, she was over-medicated, and we talked about that a little bit off the camera. I don't know how much she's talked about that, but we really should get into that, that they were drugging her. I've seen it. I saw it in a case. I heard it. I heard the 10 different psychotic medications they were injecting into a grown man that was put into a hospital on a 72-hour hold for a month and a half.
Yeah. Well, the hospital's bipolar.
Well, Jamie, I can say maybe your state needs a new governor. What do you say?
You know what? Think they might need one, you know. And I want to tell you that we the people have to step up and start taking some of those positions. And I want to tell you why the governor is so important. The governor is most states, our state has a little less power than some of the others, but they are very powerful. And we keep putting it's not just the hospitals, the police officers, the departments that you deal with, it is the politicians. And the governor is definitely part of these contracts and the funding for his state.
Yes, definitely, totally. And the other thing, too, is if you complain to anybody, the next thing you've got from the OPG is a threat that they're going to put your mother in a nursing home, drug her, and kill her. They have literally said that. I have heard the OPG say things like, well, of course, she had to be guardianized because you don't want to leave old people in the community for too long. That was from Thomas Brennan. He's a director of intake at the Office of Public Guardian. Who are these people? They're like walking Satan. You know, they're horrible people. How could he? And he did that out in the corner of the courtroom. And he said that statement. And I was just ready to, like, I was ready to stab him. I'm glad that there were two knives in there.
I don't know how.
Think about physical violence, okay. But that's how much of a piece of dirt this person has to be. I want to wrap this up. A little bit long. So, Joanne, as far as our guest situation's concerned, some preventative measures to prevent a likely case for her to show up again?
Oh, you're trying to figure out how to stay out of guardianship? Stay away from these people. Get your property and trust. Get a will. Get your power, property and health care. Don't let anybody nefarious in your family get near grandma or grandpa. They will kidnap them. Or anybody disabled, right? You hear the disabled stories. It's the same thing. And the other thing, too, is if you suspect they're going to guardianize you, be prepared to leave the state and maybe even leave the country.
Yes.
Right, Jamie? There's no other way to get out of it. We know plenty of cases.
With my mom.
No, they just continuously take that power. And again, I saw it. I was arrested for that case. They will take and do whatever they can to cover it up. They will do whatever they can to take you down, to do whatever it takes to cover up and get the money, the funding.
The money. They want the money.
A judgment and a contempt order record against me without due process. It was my own stuff. I mean, it's crazy.
I like when they say, don't record, it's confidential. And I always tell them, well, they're recording. I
always record.
Record. That's one thing we all agree on. Always record.
Record. They're not telling you enough. Record.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone for coming on to the show. Thank you, Jamie, for being my co-host. Joanne, thank you for being my legal advisor. And
it's always interesting.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. We appreciate the exposure. And Joanne definitely can use donations or anything. She's wonderful.
Great woman. She is a saint, even though
she's close to her. So I'm excited. I look forward to Joanne. Yes, to getting to know you, and I would like to help in any way that I can.
And me the same for you. Me the same for you, and for you, sir. Thank you so much. You're great to be on.
This has been an episode of Family Case Files. Catch us next time. I'm Host B, and hey, this is what it's all about.
Let me ask you something. When my wife's father has introduced me to stogies, what is she going to say?
Next time, grab your hardcore. Keep it real. Take her red pill.
Say hello to my little friend!
Conan! What is best in life? Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentation of your women.
That is good.
That is good.
Tune in next time to Red Pill Hardcore. Keep it real. Take the red pill.
True winner.
And I get the green light from Mom.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Easeoff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.